Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. Hello, folks. Just a very quick introduction from me here at the beginning. In this episode, you're going to listen to a conversation I had with English teacher and podcaster Stephen DeVincenzi, who does a podcast about learning English with the news. We recorded a video for this, but we had technical problems. So only one part of that video is available on YouTube. If you go to my YouTube channel, you will see it. It's the part where we discuss the pros and cons of using the news to improve your English. That's the only video part on YouTube. But the audio is fine, and you're listening to it now, and this audio will be available everywhere, including YouTube, as usual. And you can check, if you're on YouTube, you can check to see if the automatic subtitles are available. And don't forget to smash or smack or some other verb that like button in the process. So yes, while recording this, we were plagued by technical difficulties while trying to do this episode. And in fact, this is the third time we tried to record. We did this three times. About 3 weeks before this, we did another full recording of over an hour, which turned out to be unusable because of issues with lag and distorted sound and horrible internet-based problems. And then we set up another meeting, but we had to cancel that due to Stephen's poor internet connection. And then Stephen had fiber optic internet set up in his room, so he was ready to go. And then so did I. I got fiber optic. And then I got my electricity installed. But then my fiber optic internet went down, and it's still down. I'm even now looking at the box. Yeah, it's still stuck. But despite the gremlins in the system, we managed to record this third version on Zoom with my iPhone working as an internet hotspot. So we managed to make it work in the end. And this episode is all about learning English with the news. The pros, the cons, the hows, the whys. Is listening to the news a good idea for learners of English, and how can you do it? Let's discuss. I'll chat with you again briefly at the end, but now let's get started. Hello, listeners. Hello, video viewers. Welcome to this conversation that you're going to listen to me have now with Stephen DeVincenzi, who I'm talking to. Stephen is a podcaster, an English teacher, and a language learner. And he's the host and creator of the Send 7 podcast. That is Simple English News Daily. Seven. Why? Seven is 7 minutes long?
That's exactly right. Yeah, it is. And it's an acronym. So S-E-N-D 7, Send 7, Simple English News Daily in 7 minutes.
In seven minutes.
Where it comes from originally, Luke. And well done on pronouncing my name right. That was absolutely perfect how you said it there.
DeVincenzi.
Perfect. So, absolutely perfect.
But where does that name come from? And in fact, where do you come from?
So, I'm Stephen DeVincenzi and I'm from England. But my dad is from Gibraltar, which is that little peninsula between Spain and Africa. And there, lots of people have Italian surnames for some historical reasons. Italians went there 200 years ago. And apparently my ancestors were some of them. So that's why I've got my Italian surname.
Okay. But you're basically English.
Yeah.
Having kind of grown up in the south of England, southeast of England, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I live in Canterbury in the southeast. That's about an hour away from London in the southeast, mm-hmm. towards Dover.
I've got a friend of the podcast. Actually, I made this joke last time. The first time we recorded, I made this joke. And when the recording was lost, I just thought, ah, damn, and I came up with that funny joke on the spur of the moment. So I'm now going to do it again, because long-term listeners will know that I have no trouble repeating jokes if I feel that people haven't understood them or heard them. So, yes, you're from Canterbury. I've got a friend of the podcast who lives in Canterbury, Andy Johnson. He looks like Moby, and he likes running. Okay, he's constantly running around the place, keeping fit. And so if you see Moby running around Canterbury, then you can say, hi, Andy, from Luke. Unless, of course, it is the actual Moby.
Yeah.
In which case you can say, oh, sorry, Moby, I thought you were someone else.
great. No autograph, just...
Oh, sorry, I thought you were that. Andy Johnson. I do apologise. It's because normally Andy is being... It gets mistaken for Moby, and people are like, oh, Moby, I just wanted to let you know that I love your music. And he's like, I'm not Moby. I know you're just saying that, but...
Yeah.
So if you do see Moby, you can say hi. Either hi, Moby, or Andy. I'm not sure which one it is.
I will.
Okay, so tell us about your podcast, first of all.
Sure.
What is it? We've got lots of things we can talk about. Making your podcast, which is all about the news. Also, yeah. I want to talk to you about using the news to learn a language.
Sure.
And also, you've got your own language learning experiences that you've had as well. Yeah. So remember that conversation we had about 3.5 weeks ago? let's just do that again, but
okay.
With less technical blips and glitches.
Yeah, good. Higher quality conversation, even with lower quality video.
Yes.
Fine.
I think so.
Yeah, good. Okay, well, shall I start by saying my background? How about that?
Go ahead. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, great. I'm Stephen, and I'm from England, and I live in Canterbury, which is famous for its cathedral, which is where the head of the Church of England lives, the Archbishop of Canterbury.
He's like the English Pope.
Like the English Pope, exactly, yeah.
I'm not sure if that's a good example, but anyway, yeah.
I can't think of any other one. So I'm 31, but most of my life I've been travelling and teaching English most of the time. So after I finished university in London, I went to Spain and I was a teacher in Spain for a year. And then I went to Australia, where they already know English quite well. So I taught some other things, more or less. So I taught some other things there. And then I went to India for a while. Then I went to Thailand, where I lived for a year and taught in a primary school. And then I went to Argentina, where I spent 2 years, and then I came back to England just a bit before the pandemic.
Wow.
I think.
You've been around a bit, haven't you?
I've been around a bit. So have you, Luke.
Yeah, I've been about a bit as well. Not as many places. I've taught in Japan. Obviously, I live in France. Did some other teaching in some other countries and stuff, and a lot of time spent in London, but I haven't sort of travelled around. Listeners, Stephen is drinking from a cup of mate tea.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I am, representing Argentina, my couple of years in Argentina here. Just in case anybody doesn't know what mate is, it is a tea which you put in one of these little pots, which is made from something like a kind of from the pumpkin family.
Yeah, it's like
called a gourd.
It's a gourd, isn't it? Yes.
Yeah,
gourd. Made from some sort of like a squash or something that's been tried
exactly.
out.
Exactly, yeah, like a squash. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So this is one part of it there. And in Argentina and in Uruguay and in Paraguay, everybody is completely fanatic of drinking mate all the time. And during my 2 years there, I became slightly addicted myself, and I've kept up that since coming back here. I still drink a lot of tea with my family and friends and stuff,
but
also drink a lot of mate as well when I can.
Yeah, I need to get into drinking mate. It looks good, and the way that you can constantly just top it up all day.
Exactly.
And it is full of vitamin C and stuff like that, isn't it?
They say it's got lots of vitamins. I'm not sure how much is true, but it tastes nice anyway.
Fantastic.
Once you get used to it.
So you've been to so many places, though. What sort of stands out in your memory? Not just, you know, as well as like the mate and stuff that you've loved in Argentina, what sticks out in your memory is one of the traveling experiences that you've had that stays with you?
Well, it is. I kind of separate my time into my time that I've been working and like mostly teaching English, as I've done in all of those places I named, and then I've got other just general traveling experiences. Like I've been around Asia quite a lot, South America. I know a lot of the continent really well, and Europe as well, very well. So, but from a more teaching perspective, it's really different teaching in each place. They have really different ideas of what it is to be just learning English and how you should learn English. In Argentina, a lot of people just wanted much more kind of conversational classes and things like that. But in Thailand, people wanted something much more formal and structured.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can imagine that. Maybe in Japan, it was maybe something similar.
Absolutely. It sounds very similar to Japan and France, are the two countries that I've worked in. And yeah, in Japan, it can be very difficult to get the students talking. And a lot of the time, it's just spent desperately trying to like get them to be productive and to actually talk and stuff. For various reasons, you know, it seems that people are a bit quieter. But then in France, teaching in France, where people are very talkative anyway, you can't, you know, you can't shut them up.
Great.
not that I would want to. Yeah, that is absolutely fantastic. It's just perfect for a teacher because, you know, you give them a task, you give them things and they will talk. And then if they are left idle, if you just leave them, if something happens in the class and there are just some people left doing nothing, they will just start talking to each other. They're like programmed to just like blah, 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 blah. It's the sort of Latin thing. In English, they'll do it in English because they've got the right attitude. Yeah. Unless it's a gang of teenagers or something. But for the most part, adults will do it in English and that's great. Whereas if you start doing some sort of language work, especially on paper, they'll sort of glaze over a bit. Whereas the Japanese, heads down, bam, straight into it. They do study a little bit more sort of formally in that way. Different teaching cultures or learning cultures. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the work side.
That is the work side, yeah. And then, well, you can ask me a question about traveling more generally, whatever. But I've been a lot of Asia and South America and Europe. I know pretty well.
Yeah,
I'm happy to say.
Where's your favourite place? Now, this is going to alienate like most of the rest of the world now. Like, please say my country. But I don't know. What's your current favourite?
I think if I just had to, if I was given, you know, 6 months where I was only able to travel in one country, then it would probably be India. But that's kind of cheating because India is so big. It's kind of like 20 countries anyway. Mm. But it's just, there's just so much to see and do and so many different cultures and types of people and slightly biased, it is my favorite food as well in the world. So but no, I don't know. Indonesia, a fantastic place to travel, and all of Southeast Asia.
Where did you go?
South America, I can't get enough of.
In Indonesia, where did you go? Did you go to Lombok Island by any chance?
Yes,
you did.
Yeah, I did.
Did you climb up Mount Rinjani?
No, I didn't actually. No, I was there around the time when there was some volcanic activity.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether I would have done if it wasn't for that. But I spent most of my time in the south, I think, and in the capital that I can't remember the name of now.
I don't remember either, personally. Yeah. All I remember is Rinjani and the.
Did you climb Rinjani then?
Yeah.
What was it like?
With my wife, it was. Oh God, that's a whole other story for another time. I have recorded several episodes
about
that.
No,
I can't go into it now. but it was a nightmare and it was amazing both at the same time. I mean, it took 3 days. It was supposed to take 3 days. It took us actually longer. And we didn't do the full trek that we were supposed to do. This is where you like climb up the top to the crater and then you camp there and you sleep until 2 a.m. And then from 2 a.m. you start walking up to the summit, which is a, you've got the crater rim and there's one section at the back of the crater where it rises up really far again. So there's a peak there. And so you get up at 2 and you start hiking and then by the time you get to the top, the sun comes up. So the sun came up for us just as we were reaching the top. But it was, at times, it was seriously dramatic. It was cold and very windy and dangerous. I mean, it was just, there was no medical rescue, no helicopter, nothing. And there were points where we were walking along a section of the path that was maybe, you know, 40 centimeters wide and just sheer drops on both sides because you're walking along a ridge. Yeah. And then, and wind, like strong wind, and it's so cold, your hands are like, you've got to put thick gloves on, your hands are freezing.
Oof, and dangerous.
This wind coming across, my wife is walking in front of me, and I'm sort of like trying to keep her steady, and had to get something out of a bag. It was like, I think, a coat to keep her warm. And so I was like rummaging in her backpack with in this wind and rummaging in. And then a set of iPhone headphones just went flying off, just disappeared into the crater.
Wow.
Just wham, gone. And I was like, oh my God, you know, and then managed to get the thing going. But yeah, it was really, really, really crazy and dangerous. And tough.
Maybe I can say a story which is kind of comparable because it's in those same set of islands.
Yeah.
But you know, all the way over the other side of that set of islands, you've got Timor, which is split between the Indonesian part and the country, which is Timor Leste.
Yeah.
East Timor. Yeah, which has been independent for 15 years or something. And I climbed a mountain there. But it was just the most remote experience that I think I've ever had. I stayed in the only hostel in the country in Dili, in the capital. And to be able to get to this mountain, you had to travel. I think there was public transport to one small place in the mountains that was more or less close. But then from there onwards, there was just nothing. And so I set out, really early in the morning to try to get to this next little village, which was at the bottom of the mountain, which is called Mount Ramalau. And I just was just walking for a few hours until there was this truck which had lots of sand in the back, which was going past, and I was like, "Oh,
you hitchhiked."
And they were, hitchhiked. I hitchhiked exactly, and was on the back, and I got back with all the sand, was rolling around in the sand. That was fun, and they took me to this little town called Hatubulko or something like that, and must have been about 300 people or something.
Yeah,
and I think there was one little place, which I suppose they call it a posada, which would only be open if anybody is actually there to stay. I was probably the first person who stayed there in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And the lady was like, "Ramalau?" And I was like, "Yeah." And so she just, like, she said, "Guide." And she just called out into the valley. So there's a big valley behind, and she just went, like, calling for the guide.
She just called, just this, like it's sort of like the olden days. She just
absolutely, just shouted out into the valley. And this boy, must have been about maybe 17, 18, walked up with a chicken in his hands, a live chicken upside down. He was like, "Oh, Ramalau?" I was like, "Yeah." And we spoke in a kind of mixture between English and Portuguese.
Yeah.
And he said, "Okay, I'll get you at 2 o'clock in the morning." And I said, "Okay." I didn't really know why, but he came back and picked me up at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it was because it took a couple of hours to get to the top to see the sunrise.
Yeah,
and maybe it ended up something similar to your situation in Lombok there.
Yeah, but we were above the clouds at the top there. It was 3,750 odd meters up. I mean, it was grueling and punishing to get there because you're climbing on sand and ash.
Yeah.
It's an active volcano as well. And there's smoke pouring out of it and stuff. And climbing up sand and ash in the baking hot sun. And you take two steps up and you slide down one step and various other things. My wife got ill. I mean, the conditions, I have to say, were terrible. I mean, there's no one there to clean up rubbish. There are guides who go up and down every day, and they just carry all the stuff in plastic bags. I mean, my wife is from Paris, and she's a little bit, she can be a little bit picky in terms of, like, you know, just go to some slightly crap average restaurant in London. And she's like, oh, I don't like this place. Can we leave? You know, and so here we were sitting on the mud floor in a clearing of a little bit of sort of woodland area on the side of this mountain. We're sitting down so they could cook us lunch, and they start getting the bags out and everything. So they were carrying this stuff on their shoulders. They start getting their bags out to start preparing it and cooking it on this very disgusting, dirty stove, which is covered in grease and mud and stuff. And one of them pulls out of his bag another bag, and now this is one of those plastic bags that you get from the off license.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So listeners, this is just like your generic brandless plastic bag that you get from the corner shop. You know, they're often blue or pink, very thin, very flimsy. So the guy pulls one of these bags out, and in it there's just some chicken breasts, just directly in this crappy bag, and he plonks the bag of chicken pieces straight onto the mud, just puts it down on the mud, and gets out a knife, which is all scorched and dirty and greasy. And I just remember looking at my wife and just seeing the horror on her face. Yeah. And the conditions, you know, no toilets. They would burn plastic bags to get rid of them.
Oh, yeah. So
there'd be these little bonfires on the way and burning plastic. Yeah. And just like the physical demands of climbing this thing, it took so many, you know, such a long time. We were so exhausted, and yeah, my wife got unwell, and it became like sort of a survival situation. It was just crazy. Anyway, we're getting really sidetracked here by traveling tales.
An enjoyable sidetrack.
Yeah, but anyway, when we got to the top, right? We were above the clouds, so we saw the sun coming up through the clouds. And you could see in the distance the peaks of some other mountains. There's one on Bali.
Yeah.
So we could see that. And it was just incredible. I mean, really the most amazing thing. So it was worth it. Did you see that too? Were you above the clouds?
Just above the clouds, and saw the sunrise coming up there. It's a little bit further away from the other islands there, so I couldn't see any other islands. Mm-hmm. But yeah, fantastic experience.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Okay, what should we talk about now? Should we talk about your podcast then? So did you set this up then when you came back to England?
Yeah, so I'd had an idea of something like Simple English News Daily for about a year or so. Essentially, I wanted to combine two of my biggest passions. One, which is education and teaching English in general. And the other one, which is the news, world affairs, which I've been massively involved in all my life. I've been, you know, I'm one of these people who is just constantly reading newspapers, articles, listening to news, radio, podcasts, things like this, mm-hmm. all the time. Mm. And I've always done that for hours every day. And, you know, I pride myself in being able to have a conversation about essentially any country in the world, more or less about, you know, the situation there. And so combining these two things, I came up with this podcast, Simple English News Daily, where I would just tell the news in a slightly more simplified form, using more simple English than is normally found in the BBC and other sources,
mm-hmm.
And condense it to make it just 7 minutes, so that it can slot nicely into people's days.
Okay. All right. So you say sort of 7 minutes of simplified English news.
Yeah.
How do you simplify? What does that mean? What is simple English? In what ways are you grading your English for people?
I think simplified would be taking a story which is generally quite complicated, sometimes they're not, but a lot of the time they are,
mm-hmm.
and trying to find the most simple way of explaining it, so that the whole story can be condensed into 3 or 4 sentences. I like to say that it's generally an intermediate level podcast, so mm-hmm. maybe level B1, B2. Occasionally, it's not possible to use words which are B1, B2 words. So sometimes it goes into the kind of C1 territory.
Yeah.
But most of the time, it's possible to explain a story in more simple words. And I think, hopefully, for people who are spending most of their time learning English from textbooks and through grammar and things like that, that this can be a way of getting just understanding real messages in their everyday life.
Mm-hmm. Right. So kind of grading vocabulary seems to be quite a lot of it. You also speak a bit slower, don't you, in those episodes?
Yeah, slightly. Not, I don't think it's too far off.
Yeah.
What people would generally speak. Maybe it's a bit slower than the way me and you are talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I know that after traveling the world all these years, whenever I'm speaking to people who have English as a second language, I generally try to make myself more easy to understand anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's just the nice thing to do. So it's probably a similar kind of speed to how I would generally talk to people who have English as a second language.
Yeah, there is there's a sort of an art to grading your English for learners of English. There's some people who know how to do it, and there's people who sort of don't. And the teachers, you know, the people who've been, you know, working in the field for a long time, generally, we know how to grade our English, and it's not necessarily to change the things you're saying that much, although sometimes it's necessary to just sort of like use less idiomatic language or give things very plain and simple. But also it's a question of knowing how native speakers will squash a sentence and sort of not doing that while also trying to sound natural, because what you don't want to do is like go into what's kind of called foreigner speak, which is like, okay, I go to market, you come to market to tomorrow, okay, good. I used to work with an American guy who'd lived in Japan for so long that he sort of like started speaking like the locals. So he would say to me, Luke, what will you do this weekend? Will you go to a restaurant? That's how he spoke to me. Luke, what will you do? Like, no one says, what will you do?
We go restaurant together? Or
Luke, I am going to I will go to a restaurant. You know, do you want to go? Do you want to accompany me to a restaurant? And I just thought, wow, you've been living in Japan too long. So while not sort of adapting in that way, just staying the same.
Yeah, you did say something really important there for a microsecond, which was breaking up the words. That's important.
Yeah.
So, native speakers of all languages have a tendency to squash everything together. Mm-hmm. So you don't know when one word ends and when another word begins. Yeah. And so in the podcast, I generally try to make every word distinguishable, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because a learner of English might say, so what are you going to do? What are you going to do? What are you going to do? And that means, what are you going to do?
Exactly.
But we can't necessarily say, so we wouldn't say, what will you do? Instead, it would be like, so what are you going to do? Or what are you going to do?
Yeah.
But, you know, sort of breaking the words up, but not speaking in a weird way. Still somehow being natural and normal.
I think I said to you before that I actually, speaking French, because I speak a bit of French.
Yeah.
I actually understand African speakers. I generally understand African speakers better than I understand people from France.
Yeah.
And I think that is because of this, because they generally say each word separately. They generally say je ne sais pas rather than je sais pas.
Bah, je sais pas.
Or je sais pas. Yeah, something like that. Which can be very useful.
Okay, so it's kind of like the skills that you've learned as a teacher, learning how to talk to learners of English, and that's what you sort of try to do. So in terms of getting the news and then broadcasting it, how do you get your stories? Where do you get your news from? And how do you know? How are you selective about the stuff that you put into your stories?
Yeah, great question. And this is a really fundamental part of what the podcast is, because we claim to be unbiased and try to be as neutral as possible, which is sometimes a very difficult thing to do in this complicated, what's it called?
Post-truth era.
post-truth era. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But to try to maintain what I believe to be unbiased and to be neutral, I would generally just go to lots of different sources. So Reuters, the Associated Press, both of them, they've got thousands of journalists all over the world. So that's a good start. And then you've got some more American ones like the New York Times and maybe CNN or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then you've got some from, you've got Al Jazeera, which is from Qatar, which is a really high quality news source, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. You have to know in each one if they've got a little bit of a bias sometimes.
There probably is. I mean, you know, really, if you just have a look at the world and interpret it, then there's going to be some bias in there. And I mean, you know, it's kind of like, bias is unavoidable, but it doesn't mean that you should completely throw it away.
No,
you know, even though bias is unavoidable, we've got to be aware of it, mindful of it, and try to look beyond it and be, try and get information from as many different sources as possible, rather than, for example, just only relying on the information that's been given to you by the single news provider in your country, which is basically what the government is telling you is happening. So that might not be the most reliable source of information, considering where it's coming from. Whereas at least trying to get as many diverse sources of information as possible is probably what it's about.
I think you've said two really important things there, Luke. The first one, which was, there are certain countries that really restrict media access and actually disallow certain things from being said, and have a monopoly on information. And in those countries, you're probably not going to have the best information, because if your government is actually worried about allowing the press to be free, then they've probably got something to hide. But also in the rest of the world, where the media is much more free, there's been something which I've found a bit saddening over the last few years, which is where people just seem to go, oh, it's too much. I don't believe anything, you know, or I think all mass media is just completely evil, it's full of lies, and if something is reported in the BBC, then it must be a lie. I think that this is a really bad way of coming to the problem
And that's not to say that there isn't misinformation in those, let's say, mainstream channels. Although mainstream media, I mean, that even that expression is a little bit I understand it refers to the major news sources like, you know, the BBC and so on. But anything could be mainstream. Like, YouTube is mainstream now.
Absolutely.
So whatever someone says on YouTube, that's now mainstream media too. So, you know, the term is, you know, it's loaded when people are the mainstream media.
I believe that actually today there are more people who get their news from social media than from what we consider to be mainstream sources, which is, well, it shows that really it's not mainstream anymore.
I suppose so.
I do think that that's it's not great, because for example, if somebody just makes a meme that says Luke robbed a shop 2 weeks ago, and it can be spread around the world a million times, and there might be a lot of people that believe it, there's nothing that you could do about it. Whereas if it's if a newspaper said the same thing, then you'd be able to sue them and take them to court.
And
do something about it, basically.
A certain amount of accountability involved that you don't necessarily get in social media. But I was also just trying to say that outlets like the BBC, maybe they do print the wrong thing sometimes. Maybe some people are not transparent there. You know, some people are probably, what's the word for it, biased. And maybe they are working as a government mouthpiece. But the BBC is a very broad organisation. You've got... You know, the funny thing about the BBC is that people on both sides criticise it. Okay, so if we talk about the left-right spectrum, The people on the right say, oh, the BBC's like left wing. It's like they've got this woke agenda and it's all liberal and they're social justice warriors and stuff. And people on the left look at the BBC and say it's basically a mouthpiece for the government and it's just there to uphold the status quo. And it's just essentially a propaganda machine for the establishment.
A perfect example of what you've just said is that during the Brexit referendum, the Brexit, the people who wanted Brexit said that the BBC was the Brussels Broadcasting Corporation, like saying that it was in favour of Brussels, in favour of the EU.
Yeah.
And the people who were supporting Remain called it the Brexit Broadcasting Corporation. that was the BBC saying that, no, it's in favour of Brexit. So, I think that's, for me, that's quite a good show because it shows that it's not being clearly one way or the other.
Yeah, absolutely. And also the other thing the BBC always tried to do was be balanced.
Mm.
But then when you've got a situation like Brexit where there's one side of the debate, which is laying out all this evidence and it's like full of experts who really know what they're talking about, business leaders, you know, people who understand the economy, and they're all, the vast, vast majority of them are saying, no, this is a really terrible idea for these reasons, blah, blah, blah. And so that's like, you know, a large chunk of the sort of community. And then you've got these fringe people who are sort of like bandying around vague promises about what will happen after Brexit. And the BBC goes like this, okay, so we've got all of these people who are giving the reasons why it's a bad idea. Now we need balance.
Yeah.
And so they put in someone else like Nigel Farage, who is there to spout his rhetoric. And
that's true.
But the problem with that is that it presents these two things as 50-50 in value, that's balance.
Yeah.
It's like if you get, you know, if you get someone on TV saying, oh, you know, just any scientist, like 99.9% of scientists who say that the Earth is round.
I was just about to jump to this example. I was thinking, well, yeah, exactly. You could have somebody saying, you know, something everybody knows, that the world is round, and have all of these scientists saying, yeah, of course we know that. Yeah, 100%. But then if they have to have that voice on the other side giving their rubbish evidence, which is presented in a really interesting way, which makes it look really colourful and enticing.
Yeah,
you legitimise ideas which don't need to be legitimised. I think that's what you were saying.
Yeah, exactly. And you make it look like this is an equally valid point of view, and it's just like, well, we'll just let you decide if we're the two of them debate it with each other. So there, lots of problems with all this stuff and finding the truth. But it's probably not an absolute thing. It's probably just like something you've got to strive for, a bit like democracy, you know, rather than it being an absolute.
I think in for the podcast, and what I try to do is actually, in general, even though we've been going to some, you know, controversial topics there, actually maybe 70% of what happens is not controversial, which is in the news, you know.
Yeah.
There's an earthquake in Peru, and if you're reporting on that, then probably what they say between different media channels is going to be very similar. And so I don't have to worry too much about what is presented there. And then if you have something which is more controversial, then I would try to look at, if it's political, I try to look at what the left wing people say, what the right wing people say, and then find what's common ground and say something which is in the middle is more likely to be true. And then if it's a conflict between countries, then something similar, and try to see what the majority of journalists from the majority of countries would agree with.
Yes. Do you know a sort of magazine / newspaper called The Week?
Do you know about I've the heard Week? Of it, but don't know much about it.
It's really good. It does a similar thing. It's basically a digest. A digest, everybody, is when, for example, lots of information is gathered together in one place and summarised. So this is a news digest, The Week, and you can find like theweek.co.uk. And what they did always in their published version, the sort of print version, was they would read all the newspapers and essentially collect all of a summary of what everyone's saying. And they collect statements from everywhere. and they say, here's the story, here's what these people said, here's what the Telegraph said, here's what the Times said, this is what the Guardian says, this is what the Independent says. And so it's kind of, it's great. It just kind of basically doesn't just tell you what's happening, it tells you what everyone is saying is happening. Yeah. And it's quite a good way to get a nice
That's fantastic.
Picture.
In fact, that's really similar to a different podcast idea I had before doing Send 7. Yeah. When I was still thinking about it, I also thought about doing one called The Media Matrix, which was going to be just that, where I kind of say what different newspapers and different channels say about each thing. But yeah,
it's a good
similar.
Idea. It's also quite a good idea in a way for avoiding bias. Because you're you're saying what other people are saying, and that's quite a good thing in conversation as well. If you're just talking about news and current affairs, you also have to learn not just to talk about your own opinions, but to talk about what other people are thinking. Yeah. And as a teacher, when people have asked me about the big sort of topics in the UK, like what do people think of Brexit? Although Brexit, I'm totally partisan about it, and I'll just say I think it's a terrible idea. But other things, like what do people say about the royal family, is an example, a good example. That's the sort of thing people ask me all the time. What do you think about having a royal family? And I'll sort of say, well, some people think this, some people think that. I don't really know what to think. Rationally, it doesn't make any sense. It's totally stupid. And who are these people? They don't have special powers. You know, it's why are they in that position? There's no reason. There's no logical reason why these people are any better.
Can I give a controversial view on the monarchy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay. I think that the Queen is the least free person in the country, and I disagree with the monarchy, and not because they're all rich and they all have this special nice life, but just because I think, is it right for us to have somebody who is born and then not allow them to do what they want with their life, but say you are going to have your entire life watched by everyone and you're going to go through your life in this really, I'm sorry to say, but narrow way, and everybody else is going to kind of dictate what you do and things like that, and then not really give you much of a room to escape, because really if somebody in the royal family, especially somebody who was going to be king or queen, wanted to leave that life, they're still going to be massively in the celebrity eye and this kind of thing. So I think I find it a bit perverse to be having this kind of system in the 21st century. And I feel a bit sorry for people who are born into this, because essentially, although they might have really, really nice lives, maybe they're not free in the same way that you or I am to choose what to do with our lives.
Yeah. It's very odd, isn't it, really? Mm. I was going to say something very profound and very deep then. And now I can't remember what it is now. Anyway.
I'll believe you.
Side question, or maybe I'm bringing this back in. Does your show have transcripts?
It does. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. For a small contribution, people can access the transcripts. So if people like what Send 7 is doing and like listening to us every day, then they can help us out to become sustainable, which we are not at the moment.
Really?
Not at all. And there's a few people who are already contributing. If you're listening, you are amazing. Thank you so much for getting us to where we are. We actually just hit 1 million downloads last week, so I'm super super happy about that.
Congratulations.
Yeah,
that's right. I'm sure it's gonna be a hit if you put the enthusiasm into it, and there's definitely a market for that, like shorter episodes.
Yeah,
if it's not 6 minute English, you know, an alternative to that, it's a good idea.
It's bound to
do well, especially after you appear on this show. I mean, come on,
yeah,
the exposure
exactly.
You're going to get
yeah.
the whole world is going to be listening to this.
Exactly, Luke. Yeah, thank you for having me.
No, it's all right, you're welcome. So learning other languages, you've yeah. learned. I'm going to ask you about this, and I also want to ask you about good news stories, happy news stories, because you do include some of them in your episodes too, I believe.
Yeah, but a segment. Before we talk about my language experience, if I may divert yeah. slightly, mm-hmm. I just wanted to mention your absolutely hilarious comedy sketch mocking newsreaders, which I think if anybody is a big fan of yours, they will have seen already. And then they'll see somebody who is here to talk about actually promotes learning English through the news. And you might think, hang on a minute, Luke thinks that's really a silly way of doing things. But honestly, that was it. I showed this to my girlfriend last night and she thought it was absolutely hilarious, because it is. It's brilliant.
One thing I miss about the UK is watching the TV. I love watching the BBC News, not just because of the facts and the way they talk about facts, but just the way that they speak on the BBC, because they don't speak like normal humans. Have you noticed? For some reason, everybody on the BBC has to speak in this kind of voice. Some of the words go down, other words go up for no apparent reason. The whole report continues in this way. It sounds factual. No one really knows what the report is about, but the main thing is that it has to end on a very mysterious note. It's true. What's going on there? Huh? It's true though. Like I think there's like three different BBC voices. There's like the voice in the studio, which is like, you're watching the BBC, everything's fine, everything's under control, here we are in the studio, no problems, the Queen's still alive, everything's fine. That's the studio voice. And then there's the radio voice, which is even more smooth. You're listening to the BBC World Service. I'm not wearing any trousers, here are the headlines. I'm sitting in a leather armchair drinking a glass of brandy. I'm cupping my balls right now. Here are the headlines. And then there's the one where the reporter is outside, and that's intense. I'm outside and everything's dramatic. I'm standing outside a building and my voice is up here because there's no ceiling to keep my voice in place. My voice could disappear at any moment. In America, though, as well, they speak weirdly on the news. Have you noticed? It's not the same as the BBC version. They've got their own special way of doing it. For me, the American news always sounds more positive and glamorous than it should do, you know, even when it's not appropriate for the story. When the police raided the serial killer's basement, they discovered just a little more than they bargained for. Not sure that's appropriate for that story. Why is it so glamorous? I don't know. A lot of people learn English with the BBC, right? A lot of people learn English, use the BBC. It's the standard. If that's the case, watch out. You might end up sounding a bit strange. You can imagine you're there with your friends, like, you know, your native English-speaking friends. You're talking about how hungover you are or something. A typical English conversation. Oh, God, I've got such a headache. Oh, I hate myself so much. I don't know why I'm doing this. Do we have to do it too? Yes, you do, fucker. It's just, no food. Eating is cheating. Just drink. But we're supposed to enjoy it. No! Put beer in you. Oh, I'm going to die. Good. I don't know what the plan is. Anyway, you're having a chat with your friends about how hungover you are. One of your friends is a French person learning English with the BBC. Let's call him Jean-Pierre. Why not? And you're like, oh, God, I'm so hungover. What about you, Jean-Pierre? And Jean-Pierre says, the scene was one of devastation. The hangover struck in the early hours of the morning. Jesus. Sounds tough. Certainly factual. What time did you get up? Witness report stated that I rose from my bed at approximately 10 a.m. before moving into the bathroom in a desperate bid to get my body clean. Then commentators are suggesting I moved into the kitchen in order to consume what can only be described as a breakfast of champions. Wow, thanks for the info.
Can you still do your newsreader's voice?
Yeah, of course I can. I do that all the time. So newsreaders always seem to speak in this kind of voice. There's this kind of strange intonation, like, what could it be? I'm sitting in an armchair and I'm speaking to Stephen DeVincenzi from the 7-7 podcast. We've been talking about language learning and travelling.
It's so accurate. It's so accurate.
Very strange way of speaking.
Especially if you say, I can't do it. I'm not going to try to imitate it because I can't. But how you said that they always finish on that mysterious note.
Yeah.
Mysterious notes or something.
They always have to finish every report on a very mysterious note.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's always fantastic. Like, I'm standing outside the da 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 da. Yeah, really, really odd intonation. So, yeah, okay, just to clarify this, right, listeners and viewers. So, a lot of my followers will know, that I do stand up. And one of the things I do in stand up is I copy the newsreader's voice. And also on the podcast, I have talked about this, and I often talk about this with my students. So, the situation is. I'm talking to my students about how they should improve their English and they need to do plenty of listening. And I say, so what kinds of things could you listen to? And all of them almost always say, oh, the news. I'll watch the BBC News or I'll listen to the BBC News. And I kind of think, I wonder why that is people's first thought. And that's it. They don't often have other ideas except Netflix, right? And I'm kind of thinking, but there's lots of other options and I'm not sure that the news is the right option. And I've said that before. I've said, why assume that you should listen to the news as your source of English? And I question that assumption. Now, here I am talking to you, and you've got a podcast, which is all about learning English from the news.
In terms of the
comedy, I'm doing it for laughs. Yeah. It's just a chance. Because then in my routine, I talk about, imagine someone learning English from the BBC. And it's like, imagine you're talking to them about the crazy night of drinking you had last night, and it's like, oh, how are you, Francois? And Francois, who's been learning English with the BBC, I'm like, how are you, Francois? Do you have a hangover? And Francois says, I can't remember my own material now. It was a scene of devastation. The hangover struck in the early hours of the morning. That he starts talking like that, and everyone's like, "What? What are you talking about?" So that's like my routine. But
that's
brilliant. I'm doing it for laughs. I just want to make people laugh. But I'm questioning.
So you can save yourself now. You can say that actually it is a good idea.
Yeah, I suppose so. And then in terms of what I say to my students, I just kind of say to them, "Look, I'm not sure the news is the best thing to listen to, and there are various reasons. I'd like to discuss this and see what you think, but I don't want to undermine or criticize what you're doing.
Maybe I can say why I think that you think that it's maybe not the best idea.
And you can
add something on if not. So maybe you could say that obviously from your comedy sketch you're showing that it's not a natural voice that people speak in when they're telling the news, and so to always be learning from that you could end up with this kind of unnatural tone. That's definitely a thing. And I suppose you could think that it's kind of impersonal language. It's not that true kind of conversation that people have.
Because instead of saying, oh, I'll tell you what, it was a nightmare. I woke up at like 5 a.m. with a terrible headache and I felt awful. I had to go to the toilet. Instead it's, the scene was one of devastation, which is exactly how they report on earthquakes and things.
What
once was a thriving, bustling city has been turned to ruins.
What once was
a tidy bedroom had been turned to, whatever. So, talk that it's not just the intonation and stuff, but the choice of words. The word choice can be quite odd, and you get these long sentences that seem to just sort of go on and on as they pack as much information in as possible.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, they can be complicated. Yeah, it can be more complicated than it needs to be, which is, in fact, exactly one of the reasons that I wanted to start Simple English News Daily was just for that. But yeah, I think, yeah, as you say, it can be unnatural, it can be complicated, it can be, it could be unmotivating if somebody just isn't that interested in it. Yeah, possibly.
That's the kind of thing, actually, because in your case, I mean, you're a language learner too, and you love the news. You just love consuming information about what's going on in the world.
Exactly.
But most people are not like you, I think, and most people just assume that the news is the thing. And I sort of say to them, yeah, but are you just interested in news? Is that like your thing? Do you consume a lot of news in your own language? And they're like, no. Yeah. So I'm sort of like, well, why do you think it's going to be the right thing for you to do in English then? You know, what you need to do is follow your passion and just do it in English. So it sort of works for you, but for some people, they just sort of assume it's the thing without really having a desire to absorb that kind of information.
Totally, yeah. And in fact, you know, a strange thing to say when I'm on Luke's English podcast, and I could possibly try and get lots of more listeners to my podcast. But actually, yeah, if you're not interested in the news, then I would say, yeah, it's not the podcast for you.
But I don't think, to be honest, that many people would be listening to it if they weren't interested in the news.
That is true.
But then again, I literally just said that people are listening to news even though they're not interested in it. So, you know, it's a win-win, probably. You're probably fine. Yeah.
But, I don't know. But in general, thinking about the positives of the news is one thing, and one reason why I expect that a lot of your listeners say that is because it is actually regular, fresh information every day. You know, something new which comes into the world and is just produced and is ready to listen to or read or whatever or watch in this case. So yeah, and although there may be some people who just say no, I'm not interested in that, it is actually, well, obviously if you're me, it's very interesting, but it's also just very important. It is actually stuff which is happening all over the world and can have effects on people's lives in many ways. And then going back to the English itself, although it may not be the most natural language all the time, it's going to be correctly spoken and a good model of how to speak in general.
I sort of exaggerate the news voice because it's not quite as exaggerated as that.
No, and if anybody listens to Simple English News Daily and they think that I speak like that, then you can please send me an angry email or something. but I think fundamentally it's great to just fit into your daily routine because it's something which is just, I mean, as fantastic as your podcasts are, there's going to be a lot of people who to listen to something like this, you know, an hour-long episode. You probably have to go out of your way a little bit to make that decision that you are going to spend that time listening to this. Maybe people listen when they're going for a walk, as I do with podcasts, or maybe people put it on in the background when they're doing something. But with the news, and particularly with Send 7, it's something which is, it's, you know, 7 minutes long, and it can be fitted. Is that a word?
Yeah.
It can be slotted into that morning routine when you're making a coffee, when you're taking the train, in any time like that. I think having it as part of the daily routine is easier. And actually, even if you're somebody who is not particularly interested in the news, you know, you can get that information in 7 minutes, and then you can just forget about it.
You don't have to worry about any more news. You've got it
for the rest of the day. Yeah.
I was just thinking, actually, if my episode is typically 70 minutes long, it's basically, I mean, like, I was thinking, like, mine is 7 minutes too, listeners, viewers. My episodes are 7 minutes as well. It's just that they continue after 7 minutes. You've got 7 minutes with me. If that's all you want is 7 minutes, just do 7 minutes and stop. Or you've got 10 7-minute episodes, one after the other.
You know,
I'm 7 minutes too. I'm joking. But so, I was just going to say that So advantages, right, of using the news. So whereas, okay, while, I mean, while maybe it's not the it's not like natural conversational discourse, because you've got these different features of language. There's like grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation, and discourse.
Yeah.
Right. And so this sort of relates to things like standards of style and conventions of structure and lexis and stuff like that for different situations, and how English is used and put together for particular purposes, the pragmatics of English. Whereas it's rather specific in that, in that sense, that the discourse is maybe not the thing to copy. There are plenty of other things that you could copy from it that are very, you know, transferable to normal conversation. And for example, the vocabulary, it's very, it's really quite high surrender value. Ooh, nice meta language. Surrender value, this is basically when you're teaching to some students in a classroom and you're teaching them language and you think, right, is this language that they can just immediately go away and use? If it is that kind of language, then it's got very high surrender value. For example, if they are lawyers and they're using English contract law and stuff, if you go through a bunch of common terms that you find in contracts and teach them how to construct them and avoid common errors with them and stuff, that's very high surrender value, because they can literally that afternoon go off and apply what they've learned. Whereas that's if you're teaching a bunch of, I don't know, nurses some like vocab for playing football, you know, that's not very high surrender value. So in terms of what you're doing, you're talking to them about what's going on in the world and all the most current up-to-date things. And so that is quite a lot. That is high surrender value, because it's just like, this is what's going on today. And it's definitely good fodder for conversations.
Yeah, especially if they complement that with knowing about this in their own language as well.
Yeah.
If they have a background of, you know, a story which is in their own language, and then they know these nuggets of vocabulary and grammar from hearing it in English, then it can make it easier to talk about in English after that. And of course, I think we can't underestimate people's ability to recognize when English, or how it should be spoken. So people know that when they listen to the news in their first language, it's done in a different way to when they're having a conversation on the street. So So, you know, this comedic situation of Jean-Pierre speaking like that, you know, it's probably not going to happen.
Yes, it's right. I mean, he's obviously got the transferable skills from his first language, where he knows. Yeah, he's able to identify the different register of English in the same way that it's the same register in French and stuff like that. Because in French, newsreaders have their own way of doing it as well. And
next time I talk to you, you can show me how the French do it. Yeah, you can practice the French newsreader's voice.
Okay, I'll give it a shot. Yeah, I can't do it right now. I'll do the American one, but not the French at this point. But yeah, grammar as well. Obviously, there's tons of grammar in the news. Sometimes it's a bit complicated, but there's a lot of structural stuff there that you can certainly pick up, and pronunciation. Yeah. As well. I mean, despite the slightly unnatural intonation in some reports, a lot of the time the news is read like this, especially if you're listening to it on BBC Radio. You might find that, hello, you're listening to BBC Radio News. Here are the headlines. Today, blah, blah, blah. Everything was fine. There were no problems in the world. Lots of people had sex and made lots of money. And everything was good.
All buses arrived safely at their destinations.
No technical difficulties online. Everyone arrived at their English lessons on time. There's plenty of stuff. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. In learning English, I think all roads lead to Rome. You know, that whatever path you take, as long as you are enthusiastic about it and you're doing it regularly, that's going to take you to the right destination, ultimately.
Yeah. And Luke, in fact, some of my listeners have told me that they are people who don't actually have time to study English these days, that they don't have time to take out a textbook or do some grammar things, or actually just that they don't want to, and that their connection to English, they want it to be something smaller and something bite-sized to just put into their day like that. So I agree, but if we start moving into my language journey, that has been so important for me. Having this little and often method of learning has been really important.
How has that worked for you? So what's you as a learner of English? You already knew that. But as a learner of what? Spanish, French, and
Spanish and French. I speak Spanish fluently. I make mistakes, but I'm a fluent speaker. French, I have an kind of intermediate level. I can have a conversation, and I make a lot of mistakes, mm-hmm. but I can have a conversation. And mm-hmm. then I can understand Italian and Portuguese, and but really, if I'm trying to speak it, I actually just speak loads of Spanish. So it's kind of cheating. Yeah. But yeah.
Okay, so French and Spanish then. And so the news, listening to the news in those languages has helped, has it?
Definitely, yeah. How? Yeah. And that was a big motivation for me. Of course, yeah, it's true. I've always been a news addict. So that's been useful. But I think since I was doing my A-levels, which I did in French and Spanish, when I was 18. Since then, I've kept up this habit of listening to the news especially in French, sometimes in Spanish.
Do you have a particular process for improving your French with the French news?
I think during the last 2 or 3 years, I've mostly just been listening to a couple of podcasts. One of them, for anybody who wants to learn French as well, one of them is RFI, Français Facile, their podcast, which is, it's quite similar to mine, actually. It's got 10 minutes of news. They normally speak about a few things from the world and something from France. And from the process for me, there's not much process, Luke, to mm-hmm. be honest. Mm-hmm. It's I put it on when I'm making coffee and having some breakfast. But maybe if there's something I don't understand, like what was that? Because it's a podcast, I can click on the backwards button, go backwards 30 seconds and listen to it again. Mm. But really, more than anything, it's just constant practice. Because I think, you know, when I first listened to French news, maybe I understood 30, 40% of what I was listening to. And today I listen to, I understand 70, 80%, something like that. Yeah. So, and that is actually more than anything just from listening every day. And that happens. But
okay, that's great. Mm. Shall we end in the way that they do on the news? And I think you do in your show, which is to like do a bit of good news. Because it's always depressing stuff, isn't it? War, you know, sickness and all these things. Corruption, blah, blah, blah. But you do focus on some positive stories then sometimes. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. In fact, and one thing I do want to say is that the world is, believe it or not, becoming a better place all the time. And you might not hear that if you're just listening to the news all the time, but it really, really is. People are living longer in pretty much everywhere in the world. There are diseases that hardly anybody dies from anymore. And actually, even the Global Happiness Index is actually showing that people just who are answering the question, are you happy or how happy are you, are giving the highest responses ever. Wow. Since they've started that survey. Mm. But good news, some medical innovations have been incredible recently. There's they've actually had a few people who have been cured of HIV.
Wow.
I think there's 3 people who have received this new cure. I can't remember exactly what it is, this cure.
Okay.
But they think they've got 3 people who have actually been cured of HIV, and they've been trying to do that since the 70s.
Yeah.
So that's really incredible if this holds up. Yeah. And there's certain types of cancer where they've started to have a big progress with as well, like cervical cancer, which is one of the biggest killers of women. In the UK, they started using this cervical cancer vaccine about 5 years ago, I think, and it's got something like a 90% efficacy
yeah, rate,
or reduction in women getting cervical cancer.
Wow.
Which is huge. It's absolutely massive. So, and of course, because it's a long process, it's something which maybe doesn't end up in the news, because yes, it's like over a long period of time they're working this out.
Yes, that's right.
Malaria vaccines as well. That's becoming much more likely to happen. Were you going to say something there, Luke?
I was going to say, last time we talked, you talked about how someone has developed a watch which will automatically give you a dose of insulin. It checks your insulin yeah, levels. So if you are a I can't remember the word for it. Someone who's got an intolerance to sugar.
Diabetic.
If you're diabetic and you need to check your level of insulin, I mean, yeah. The reason I brought this up is because I wanted again to make the point where I was thinking, why is it that I remember at school there were some kids who were diabetic. First of all, they had chocolate biscuits in their bag, which seemed unfair. I was like, it's not fair. Anyway, I was like, no, they're diabetic. Yeah. Oh, okay. And they would check their insulin level in their blood by pricking their finger.
Yeah.
And this is the medically accepted way of just getting a blood sample. You just prick your finger. But it just seemed to me like the most painful, and one of the most painful, and B, one of the most inconvenient places to draw blood from your body. It's on your fingertip, especially when you're at school and you're writing and stuff.
Yeah.
So why is it on the fingertip every time? I don't know. Yeah. But
they don't want to write anymore. And that's why.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Or if it's like, run out of ink, just use your finger. It's fine. I don't know. But so there's someone has developed a watch which will prick the skin.
This was a special thing for me, actually, because I didn't find this out by reading the news. Like I find out most of my information, I actually just went to a party somewhere and I just talking to a guy, and he showed me this watch that he had, and he said, "Yeah, this has completely changed my life." All of my life, I've been somebody who had to prick their finger 5 times a day. Go on.
So I thought you were going to say, all of my life, this watch has completely changed my life. All of my life, I've been late for things. So I thought you were going to say. Anyway, so all of his life, he's had to prick his finger to get his blood.
Yeah, Luke, this is a serious topic.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, but seriously, he... Yeah, so he's had to prick his finger and get blood and do a test 5 times a day for his whole life. And then all of a sudden, they've invented this watch which monitors his sugar levels or insulin level. I don't know enough about diabetes to say this properly.
Yes.
And so he just doesn't have to do that anymore. And he said, it's such a small thing, but for me, it's just it's radically improved my life. And... I've seen since then, because this was about a year ago when I'd spoken to him, they've actually also, I'm not sure if it's being used, but it exists, the same thing, but it, which automatically puts the insulin into people's bodies as well. So they won't even have to inject themselves.
Wow.
You need somebody who knows much more about diabetes than I do to give you more information about that.
In the end, we won't have to do anything. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
In the end, humans, all we will need to do is be born.
Yeah.
And then after that, we won't really need to do anything. And they'll
maybe
just be
low. Maybe we won't even have to be born.
That's a weird philosophical situation.
Yeah, okay. Moving away from the medical side.
Okay, this has got to be the last one.
Got to be the last one.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. Have you ever seen glass frogs?
Sorry, what?
Glass frogs.
Now, you mean genuinely glass frogs, or it sounds like some kind of movie?
No, it's
frogs made of glass.
They've discovered in Ecuador some species of frog. Which are see-through. So you can see all of their organs.
How did they discover them? How did they discover them if they're see-through?
Well, you know, the same way that you know that you've got water in your hand, I suppose.
Okay,
you know,
all right.
Something like that. So but they you can see their organs and things like that. It's really, really funny. You can, everybody who's listening can Google glass frogs now.
Wow.
And yeah, you know, you can see that they're there, but they're practically see-through, but you can just see their livers and things like that.
Amazing.
A bit gross.
What's the purpose of that, I wonder? Because that's, to me, that seems more like a... That's more like an advertisement to predators, isn't it? Like if you're a creature that likes to eat frogs, like having a see-through one, that'd be like here. It's like having a picture menu, isn't it? You know, it's like here are all the things that you can enjoy if you eat me. There's my liver. There's my heart. It seems more like a sort of one of those Japanese restaurants where they actually put lacquered. Demonstration plates of all the dishes that they sell. It's like, here are the things you can enjoy in this restaurant. Okay, glass frogs, cool.
Yeah. Go on. Yeah.
Amazing.
I have some more, but we are well over our time.
Yeah, I've got
to
keep an eye on the clock because I've got to go and pick up my daughter and stuff like that. But I will tell on the way home. I will tell her about glass frogs.
Please do, and
that sort of thing. That would be great. So. The usual thing that we say at the end of episodes like this is, where can people find you? And this is on the internet, of course. Don't give any actual GPS coordinates. But no, online, where can we find your podcast?
So if for people who are using podcast apps, they can type in Simple English News Daily into their podcast apps, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Simple English News Daily. And on the computer, you can go to send7.org, which is our website, send7.org. And I think that's about it. We're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and things like that as well. And you can send7.org that as well. But I don't know. I think that's it, Luke.
I think so. That's good. All right.
Yeah.
Great.
Can I say your pod room is looking fantastic, by the way? It looks brilliant.
Oh, do you like it?
Yeah.
Because the last time we spoke, I hadn't set it up like this, right?
Yeah.
There wasn't stuff on the walls. So yeah, it's looking starting to come together, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm quite happy with that. Whereas my haircut, I don't know what's going on. I've gone for a sort of a George Martin Beatles producer kind of thing. Need to get a haircut, but that's all right. Okay, look, it was really good to talk to you and really interesting to have this debate, some discussion at certain points about all of the things we've been talking about. It's been really good. Good luck with the podcast and stuff. And have a nice rest of the day.
Thank you very much. The pleasure is mine, Luke. Have a great day as well.
You too. Cheers.
Thank you.
So thanks for listening to that, everybody. That was Stephen from the Simple English News Daily podcast. Thanks again to Stephen for taking part in this episode. Let us know your thoughts in the comments section, as usual. It's always interesting to read what you have to say. What about you? Have you used the news? What about you? Have you used the news to learn English? And the second question, can you say that previous sentence? Can you say that? Have you used the news? Have you... what? Imagine you're talking to a person called Hugh. No, you're talking about a person called Hugh, and you're wondering if Hugh has used the news. So you could say, has Hugh used the news to learn English? I don't know. Anyway, have you ever used the news to learn English? Did you find it useful? How did you do it, if that is the case? Did you have a particular method, or did you just listen and just try and follow what's going on? Let us know your thoughts about using the news to improve your English. And if you've got any news of Hugh as well, that would be good. Hugh? What are you talking about, Hugh? What, Hugh Grant? Maybe. Or Hugh Laurie? I don't know. Any Hugh news? News of Hugh? If you have news of Hugh, what are you talking about? Never mind. So... listeners, if you're in the Paris area in May, sort of mid to late May, in fact, the 19th of May, to be specific, if you're in the Paris area, then why don't you come down to see me do a live podcast recording at the British Council? I'll be doing a talk in English. It'll be a storytelling thing, a storytelling night, because I'm all about the stories at the moment. just sort of really into stories and using stories and stuff. So I'm doing a sort of a storytelling night on the 19th of May at the British Council. It's going to be a story of culture shock. In fact, I'm going to be doing the Sick in Japan story, which is a sort of a long anecdote about how I went to Japan and I ended up getting sick and I ended up in a hospital bed and I thought I was, oh, it was horrible. I didn't know what was going to happen. So I tell the whole, I'm going to tell the whole story on the 19th of May and I'm going to record a podcast while doing it. So if you're in the Paris area, just go to britishcouncil.fr and then click events or événement in French. And then what happens then, Luke? Then you can scroll down and you should see a post for my talk. It's going to be something like storytelling, culture shock, live podcast recording with Luke Thompson. So it'll say something like that. You can click there and just sort of like book a seat. You don't have to pay. It's completely free. Everybody is welcome. You don't have to be a student at the British Council. Everyone's welcome. But you just give us your name so we know how many people are coming and we just get an idea of, like, you know, who's booked in advance so they can get a seat. Okay, so britishcouncil.fr, events, and then find the post for my event. And that's how you can book yourself a seat, okay? That's going to be interesting. I will be publishing that, as I said, on the podcast, if it's good. I mean, if it's terrible, if it doesn't work, if it's rubbish and there are no people there and, you know, it's a total disaster, then I probably won't publish it. But if it's any good, then I will share it with the audience, okay? But if you want to see it happen live, come on down to the British Council in Paris and there'll be a chance to have a drink afterwards, okay? Right, well, ladies and gents, that's it for this episode. I hope you have a nice morning, afternoon, day, evening, or night, and I will speak to you again on the podcast soon. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.